This music was written this year to accompany a showing that's very recently taken place in Vienna of a silent movie film that was made in that city, Vienna, in 1924. And the composer of the music was, at that time, a four-year-old boy living in Vienna. So he has just turned 100 years old. Walter Abtowitzer, who escaped from the Nazis' persecution of the Jews in 1939 and went to live in the United States with a change of name to Walter Arlen, was recently commissioned to write a new score to accompany the film Die Stadt ohne Juden, The City Without Jews. The film was an uncannily prescient fictional portrayal of what was to transpire in reality in Germany and Austria a decade later. The director of the film, Hans Karl Breslauer, based it on a novel of the same name that had been written 2 years earlier by Hugo Bettauer. And although the two fell out vitriolically, because Breslauer significantly softened up Bettauer's original ending to the extent of virtually changing the essence of the novel's final message, the film nevertheless was, and still is, a scary prediction of horrors that were to come. The fanatically anti-Semitic new chancellor of Austria's Christian Social Party passes a law that forces all Jews to emigrate from Austria. And so Vienna becomes a city without Jews, and therefore a city without culture, and in due course, a city without an economy. Unsurprisingly, within several years of the film's launch, it was banned, and then it was lost. A poor quality copy was found in Amsterdam in 1991. And then, remarkably, a pristine original print copy turned up in a Paris flea market in 2015. It was restored with state-of-the-art equipment by the Austrian Film Archive, and they, in due course, commissioned Walter Arlen to compose a new score of music to accompany a showing of the film. The tone of the film is satirical, even caustically amusing sometimes, although, of course, in a biting way. Walter Arlen's music, composed more than 8 decades after he had to flee Vienna, is anything but amusing. His experience has haunted him all his life.
It marked me for life. For me, it was a nightmare with which I had to deal.
Especially for this feature, Walter Arlen spoke with me about his life in music just a few weeks ago in his home in Los Angeles. Because of COVID-19, we had to record our conversation by telephone. But it so happens that also a conversation was recorded on the spot there a couple of years ago in which a vital figure in the coming about of the film score, Michael Brandstetter, himself a young, new generation film composer who assisted Arlen with the composition, discussed some elements of the composer's life with him. And as that conversation was recorded privately and has never been previously heard, we're also including a few parts of it in this feature, in which we're presenting the very remarkable story of Walter Arlen's life as a composer of many vocal and instrumental works that he actually, on the whole, never intended for public performance. Certainly that was the case with most of the music he wrote after he emigrated to America in 1939. His very long-time career was as the music critic of the Los Angeles Times, and he wrote music privately, inspired so often by biblical and other spiritual and poetic texts that he chose to help him connect with his Jewish heritage and to help him come to terms with his traumatic past, a past in which family members and friends were murdered or committed suicide. It was only in 2008 that he was effectively, so to speak, publicly discovered when Dr. Michael Haas, the co-founder and chair of the Exil.Arte Museum of Exiled Musicians' Lives and Works, which is housed in Vienna's University of Music and Performing Arts, began to arrange performances and recordings of his music for the very first time. Michael Haas is the author of the book Forbidden Music, The Jewish Composers Banned by the Nazis. And he personally persuaded Walter Arlen to agree to allow his music to come out of its desk drawers after several decades of burial. He now takes up for us the story of Walter Arlen's life as an émigré.
The story of Walter Arlen, who was born Walter Abtowitze. Walter became a very prominent critic. He was the main critic for the Los Angeles Times. He founded and directed the music department of Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. But he was a man who was dealing with the suicide of his mother, the suicide of cousins, the loss of friends. I mean, to this day, he still tries to find his best friend from childhood who just disappeared in the war, and the Red Cross can't help him, and he's checked all the lists on all the concentration camps. He's just vanished. And these losses, this horrible loss, the loss of the family business, the brutality he witnessed, seeing his parents deported, to his father off to Buchenwald, and having to bribe the guards, having to bribe officials to get him freed from Buchenwald, and then having him arrested again, and then having to go through the whole process again. And the humiliation and the hatred that he felt from all sides, these were things that he just could not cope with. And he composed in order to work his way through this anger.
This is one of the very few works that Walter Arlen did compose specifically for a performance, although it took many decades of revision before that actually happened. The Song of Songs is a large-scale cantata that sets the biblical poem that, uniquely in the Old Testament, does not deal with laws, covenants, and the God of Israel. Instead, it celebrates monogamous sexual love.
Basically, I found something that in some way gave me a sense of belonging, that I'm not a Trekkiud or a Sahyud, but that I belong to a people that have created the Ten Commandments and whose religion is based on basically the Ten Commandments, which eventually went into Catholicism in the New Testament. The Ten Commandments are there. The subject itself influenced me. It interested me because I recognized then that it was the first example of poetry in the history of mankind. There was no poetry like this. It's poetry before that. So it's the beginning of intellectual, emotional attitude expressed in language. It was the first of something that
is still valid today. We read poetry, and throughout history, people wrote poetry when they were poets. I looked at it as the example of the progress from polygamy, because there's talk of the harem in the Song of Songs. Solomon had about 800 wives or concubines. And there is this girl who is in love with a boy. There's this boy who's in love with a girl. And she doesn't want to be part of the harem. She wants to have the kind of love that now is accepted as a way of life. You marry, you have one husband, you have one wife. It's an evolution from polygamy to monogamy. Because she refuses to go, she cries, she doesn't want to go into the harem. And she has that lover whose name is Dodai. And she's fantasizing about him, and he's fantasizing about her. And she sees him bounding over the mountains like a gazelle, in very poetic language. And she sings, in her words, her love for him. As an apple tree among the trees, the word so is my beloved. And so it's very beautiful. And it's also fresh and so new. This is unique. It's not based on anything. It was the first time words like that, poetry like that, was written in the history of mankind.
It combines everything from ethnic, Eastern, Orientalist chanting, lots of percussion. It's a very colorful work. He preserves the eroticism very much, I think, in the text.
The conductor of this performance in Vienna of Walter Arlen's The Song of Songs, given in 2017, was Christian Schulz, and he rehearsed and performed the work in the presence of the composer.
For Walter, the ending was very important. What I remember, this was very, very important for him, how it ends. He really wanted it exactly like he wanted it, and we really worked it out. That it's because it was not written like he wanted it. So we worked it out that he was really satisfied, especially the ending.
See your form, make me to hear your voice.
The close of Walter Arlen's The Song of Songs, receiving its European premiere in its final form there, given in Vienna in 2017. That's 78 years after Walter Arlen had been forced to flee his home in Vienna to escape the Nazis in 1939. He had already begun the work by then, and in fact he'd been composing music since he was a child, nearly always songs in those very early days.
I go back in my life to writing songs since I was 7 or 8 years old, because I had a very perceptive grade school teacher. His name was Thomas, Leonard Thomas, and he was my teacher between the ages of 5 and 8 in the Graham Appert schooling. And he was very perceptive, because what he detected in me is that I had a clear voice, and when I sang, there was no wrong note. Everything I sang was right on pitch. And there was an anniversary for Schubert. I don't know, it was in 1927. There was a certain anniversary of Schubert. This teacher used for the class, the grade school class, an affair out of. And he chose me to be Schubert. And I got a costume, and I was photographed, and I was Schubert, and I was asked to sing some of Schubert's music, because this teacher was so perceptive. He understood that I was very musical, and he gave me the opportunity to show it. So I was Schubert, and I have a picture, a photograph that he had made of me, supposedly how people dressed in the days of Schubert, and I sang Schubert songs, and I already knew Schubert songs because I heard someone sing the Erlkönig. Bereite so spät durch Nacht und Wind. And the teacher heard me sing this and decided I should be Schubert on that occasion in 1927. And I have photographs of me in the Schubert costume that he chose for me to wear. And then, of course, I sang Bereite so spät durch Nacht und Wind.
An entire song. Schubert, in fact, was and remains today Walter Arlen's very favourite composer. He has always felt a special affinity with Schubert because, just as was the case with Schubert, poetry has been such a major inspiration for his compositions. For many years, though, after he had emigrated to America, except for working on the Song of Songs, he hardly composed anything else at all. He didn't feel able to do so during his tenure as music critic of the Los Angeles Times. But then, in 1986, 5 years after his retirement, after decades of inactivity, he was inspired to resume writing music again, even though this was solely for himself. He had no intention at all, or no goal of having anything performed. But he had been inspired to compose again. And the catalyst was the discovery of some poetry written by the 16th century Roman Catholic mystic, St. John of the Cross. Michael Haas and Walter Arlen take up the story for us.
His life partner, Howard Myers, presented him with the poetry of St. John of the Cross. Now, St. John of the Cross appealed to Walter for several reasons. For one thing, St. John of the Cross was a Moreno. He was a Jew who, under the Inquisition, had converted to Catholicism. But also, in order to write these poems, these love poems to Jesus Christ, he put on the mask of a woman, so that there was a kind of sexual element that was quite obvious in the poetry, even in its religious ecstasy that was being expressed. And Walter was looking for something. He and Howard had been together for decades, really. And in a society that was not very accepting of same-sex relationships. And so when Howard presented him with these poems, Walter set them as a cycle, which he entitled Songs of Love and Yearning.
I'm Jewish, and St. John at the Cross was really a Jew. His parents were Maranos. The Maranos were Jews in Spain in 1492, when the Jews were being exterminated. They tried to get rid of all the Jews, and they went into hiding underground in Slovakia, and they were called Maranos, which means the pigs, because they agreed to pretend to be non-Jews, the Maranos, in order to escape killing in 1492. And so these songs I found extremely attractive and moving, and St. John at the Cross was a son of this Jewish family who went into hiding. And he actually fell in love with Jesus. And he went underground in Toledo in some cell that was just big enough to hold his body. And he fasted and took a mask on his face, had a mask made. It made him look like the character he was wanting to become, which actually was a woman's mask that he put on. And he was in the cell that was just big enough for his body, and he was there on penance and so on. Really a very moving story. He fell in love with Jesus in a way that he, when he put on this woman's mask, he was imagining himself to have relations with Jesus as a woman. That was his inner religious attitude. I was fascinated by the story and chose to use those words.
Oh.
can cure me. Walter Arlen's setting of a poem by St. John of the Cross, and it's part of the cycle he called Songs of Love and Yearning, which he composed in 1986. By then, in his 60s, Arlen began now to compose numerous songs in varying styles, with their musical languages being determined by the subjects and feelings and the poets he chose. And the range of poets was wide. He was, and remains today, a voracious reader.
A song had to represent to me something that fascinated me or that inspired me, let's say, and for which I found a special kind of music. For instance, the songs that I think are the most telling in that area are the Kabaki songs. He fascinated me for many reasons. For the way he set words, of course, they are translations, and I found a translation that simply told me who Kabaki was. And that set talks about the Jews from ancient times in Alexandria, and how that inspired me to write that kind of music that I wrote for these Kabaki songs. I think they are my best songs, but there was always something that had to evoke an image in me. For instance, the Kabaki Byzantine, that for me it was the epitome of Byzantium and Byzantinism. And of course, I don't know what Byzantine music is, but I felt that what I was writing was as close to expressing my sense of what Byzantium was, what Byzantine music should be, that I could come to express. And that was everything.
Walter Arlen gave his song cycle setting five poems of Constantine Cavafy the title Endymion. And the fourth song depicts the Byzantine emperor Manuel Komnenos, who decided that he wanted to end his days dressed in simple attire, like a monk.
Thank you.
Manuel Komnenos, one of the five settings of poems by Constantine Cavafy that make up Walter Arlen's cycle Endymion. He composed it in 1993, and then, 2 years later, he felt compelled to make a visit to a place that he knew would be an agonizing experience for him. It was the 50th anniversary of the end of World War II in 1995, and Walter Arlen summoned up the courage to visit the Auschwitz-Birkenau Memorial and Museum so that he could retrace his family history. It led to him composing a three-movement work for piano, which he called Arbeit macht frei, the horrific slogan that appeared at the entrances to Nazi concentration camps. He called the movements Psalm, Metronome, and Schlummerlied. The metronome movement consisting entirely and solely of a metronome, which gradually gets faster and faster. It depicts the Jews approaching their deaths in the gas chambers. And then the following Schlummerlied movement is a lullaby.
The entire thing of killing 6.5 million Jews haunted me for the rest of my life. It began to haunt me when I found out, and of course it had something to do with my being in Austria when the Nazis took over, and the suicide of my mother, which was a result of all of that, and my father being in Dachau and in Buchenwald, and my grandmother being murdered in Treblinka. I mean, the thing that I went to Theresienstadt or Theresien two or three times, I had to see all that, and it just marked me for life to come close to all these happenings and to see how it happened. So, of course, for me, it was a nightmare with which I had to deal, seeing all this and the impression. And the middle movement is they're being driven into the place where they are being murdered. See, faster, 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 because the tempo. So that was my reaction to what happened to 6.5 million Jews who were murdered. The Schlummerlied, which is the third one of the three, is an image of millions of Jews dead, and they are covered by some transparent fabric, and under there lie these millions of Jews. And of course, I put the Hatikva in there, in the end, and sort of on a faraway basis. I get so upset. I talk about, they have all these people, the Jews, who are killed there. They are listening to the Hatikva. The idea, they're all dead.
Arbeit macht frei by Walter Arlen. Written in 1995, it was performed and recorded many years later when Dr. Michael Haas brought Arlen to international attention through concerts and recordings he organizes at the Excel Arte Centrum in Vienna. It was because of this new awareness of Arlen's art and his history that after the mint copy print of the 1924 silent movie film Die Stadt ohne Juden, The City Without Jews, was found in 2015, Arlen was in due course commissioned to write music for a public screening of the newly restored film, from which we heard a couple of extracts at the beginning of this program. Crucially involved with this has been the young, new generation film composer Michael Brandstetter. He vitally assisted Arlen with the composition and the orchestration of the film score, and this also included readapting some of Arlen's previous works.
It was a collaboration between Walter and me like I think no other, because I was very anxious starting with it, I have to say, and I was procrastinating a lot, to be honest, and I just didn't know how to get into it, because it is Walter's music and I am now here and I am taking Walter's melodies and Walter's motifs and now I am creating them into a film score. I mean, how dare I do that, you know? So it was a humbling experience in a way, yes? So I'm really glad that Walter, in the end, he really liked the music, and in the end it really helped that we were such close friends, because I just knew, okay, you have to get writing now and you have to get going, yeah? Even if Walter doesn't like it, well, you'll still be friends. So that was my approach, and in the end he really liked it.
And so, as Walter Arlen has turned 100 years old, his newly composed score for Die Stadt ohne Juden has been premiered in Vienna, the city where he was born and grew up, and where he experienced and witnessed the traumatic events that the film, in fiction, so prophetically conjured up a decade before they were in reality to actually start to happen. And the realization of the score has been made possible by a vital collaboration between a centenarian of history and a young composer of the present and the future, a beacon of hope for the ongoing continuity of art. Michael Brandstetter has the final words in this centenary tribute to Walter Arlen, as we hear Arlen's music in Die Stadt ohne Juden that accompanies the tragic scenes of Jews in Vienna being evicted, placed in trains that are to take them away, and desperately trying to salvage what possessions they can take with them, including the Torah scrolls and other items from the synagogue.
I wanted to create something new out of Walter's music, because I often have the feeling, yes, okay, this is everything that Walter has done naturally. It lies in the past. He has had a life. He's now 100 years old. So his whole story, of course, lies in the past. But it's not about what has happened. To me, it's about what are we gonna do now based on what's happened. So in an artistic sense, this is exactly what happened here. So I took his motifs that he has written, and I created something new with his guidance, with essentially his permission, and together we created something completely new.
Thank you. Music for the film Die Stadt ohne Juden by composer Walter Arlen in collaboration with Michael Alexander Brandstetter. That program was presented and produced by John Talansky. The producer for RTE was Olga Buckley. And you can get more information on Walter Arlen and the film Die Stadt ohne Juden at forbiddenmusic.org. The programme is available to podcast from RTE Podcasts and from the usual podcast providers. Search for the Lyric Feature Podcast. We welcome your comments by email lyric.features@rte.ie.